This is the Best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, brought to you by Coach Pete at Capital Financial Advisory Group. Visit us at capitalfinancialusa.com. This is the Adam Gold Show.
It's downright pleasant out there today. Overcast, only hitting like the low 90s instead of these high 90s that we've been having the past couple days. Oof. Yeah, we're going to talk to Jeremy Green a little bit later up in Asheville, and I'm just going to just yell at him for a little bit for not having to endure. I assume it's like about 10 degrees at the least. It's 10 degrees cooler up in Asheville. So we'll ask him about Baker Mayfield and about what the temperature's like up there. Joe Giglio will be a part of that. Coming up in 15 minutes, Luke Dukak will join us. We'll talk some more conference realignment, what the ACC can and should be doing to ensure their survival for as long as possible. One of the things that rings in my head about this is the conversation with David Glenn, who pointed out, yes, it is one that nobody's in denial of the fact that the ACC, under the current arrangements and as they move forward, will be getting less money than the Big Ten and the SEC. But I did some TV on Spectrum News with former Supreme Court Justice Bob Orr, who's been involved in a lot of sports stuff. And like one of the things he kept saying was like, what? I mean, yes, when it comes to making money for like your income, more is better than less, right? If you could do the same job and they make give you more money, that'd be a good thing, right? But ultimately, like, money can't be the number one only thing that exists in the world. Like, you can't only make every choice just to pursue the top possible dollar that you can make. And one of the things David Glenn pointed out was, when do they become at a competitive advantage? Like, if you gave every Big Ten school $400 million a year, like, let's just get stupid with it. Northwestern is still not going to be better than Clemson in football. Even if Clemson's only pulling in a measly $50 million from the ACC or whatever it is, and Northwestern's getting 100 or 120 million, Clemson is not going to fall behind Northwestern in the football game anytime soon, right? And like that has stuck with me. And so when you take out the, it's like Alabama, and then at any other given time, there's like maybe Alabama, Ohio State, and then there's usually one or so other wild card schools at the time. 8 years ago, it was like Florida State. More recently, it was Clemson. Georgia's filling that void right now. There are definitely three or four schools that if you took them away, you would still be looking at a big money, power, resource difference between everybody else in the SEC. Tennessee, perfect example. Tennessee versus Wake Forest over the past 10 years in football. How much money does Tennessee have, both from their conference payout, from their gate revenue, from being a huge alumni base, all this stuff? Tennessee has way more money, advantage, history than Wake Forest in football, right? Mm-hmm. And I, if I were a better radio host and I hadn't just thought of this comparison, you know, during this segment as I was talking, I would give you the exact numbers of what they've done over the past 10 years, or let's start with whenever Dave Clawson got there. That's 8 years ago now or whatever. But Wake Forest has whooped Tennessee in expectations, in achievements, in like going to bowl games or whatever. I'm sure they haven't played. Maybe they have played head-to-head. I don't know if they played head-to-head. But like Wake Forest has beaten SEC teams in bowl games. It's not like they're playing a soft schedule. They're playing in the Atlantic Division. They beat teams like NC State and Louisville. They haven't quite gotten over the hurdle of knocking over Big Clemson in the past couple years. But like, there's ever, if you believe that the team that has more money is always going to do better, then you're ignoring some of the evidence that says to the contrary. Now, yes, ultimately, money is a factor, right? There's a reason why they're the Division I schools and Division III schools. There's a difference between the two. But it does, there is something, it's not just, well, we're falling behind the SEC and how much money they're making. If you're not falling that much further behind in football, and no further than you, again, already were. Like, there's no amount of money that you could be given where you're going to be competing with Alabama in football, North Carolina, or NC State,
yeah,
right? Like, you're just not. you're competing with the Mississippis of the world and the, you know, not the Ohio States, but the Michigan States. You know, yeah. You're trying. Michigan State's been successful. I'm not saying that they haven't been, but like that, NC State would love to occupy a position in college football that Michigan State holds right now. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing to me that suggests that Dave Doran doesn't have on a path to do that, right? Winning every year, you're expected to win 7, 8, or 9. 1 out of 4 years, you might make a run at 10 or 11. And 1 out of 10 years, you might have a season where things go wrong and you win 5 or 6, right? You're not expected to make the college football championship every year. You might make a run at it once a decade when the stars align, and you might have a year or two that things drop off. But, like, I don't know. That's not going to disappear instantly because you're not immediately getting the hundreds of millions of dollars that the Big Ten and the SEC are. Anyway. All right. It is time. Maybe we could stop hearing. I'm acting like I don't like hearing Guns N' Roses. I'm fine. I play Guns N' Roses every intro. But it is time for Dennis Cox's review of Thor, Love and Thunder. And coming up next, after this, just stick around because Adam Gold is somehow appearing on other radio shows today. He couldn't stay away. We're going to give you his takes on Baker Mayfield in just a second. But first, how was Thor, Love and Thunder yesterday? I love how you were there like all, before I left the studio, you were already in the movie theater watching Thor, yes, Love and Thunder. Like, but when I was like sitting down to dinner and you had already seen the movie, which I assume is 3 hours because every movie now is 3 hours.
Actually, no. The runtime on the movie is 1 hour 59.
All right, well, respect to that already.
Yes. So, but here's also a slight gripe on theaters. I had a 4:30 movie. I walked in the theater at 4:50, and there were still credits trailers. Because I knew it was going to be, all right, at least 20
Somebody
minutes.
Somebody at one point.
I was like, what are we doing here?
I'm trying to think of the, we do need to regulate this. We need to change this. Because I do like seeing previews. I enjoy previews. Mm. But you don't like previews?
That's a different topic for a different time.
I like previews, and I don't love unnecessarily burdensome regulations. But I'm not sure the government shouldn't step in and say you got 5 minutes max of previews. And I think I want to look this up. I think somebody tried to sue a movie theater chain for false advertising for like you keep telling me a movie starts at 7:30, and like you said, I am getting there at 7:35. And I'm there for 20 minutes and the movie hasn't even started yet.
Yeah.
And like, you're kind of taking money out of my pocket if you're lying and telling me, you know, that I got to sit there for 30 minutes for free. It's basically to try and get everybody in through concessions or whatever. But no, we need to regulate this in the movie industry. I want this to happen.
All right.
But that gripe out of the way.
That out of the way. I can go on to that for a long time. But okay, spoiler-free review of Thor, Love and Thunder. Overall, fun movie. Very fun movie. Thor Ragnarok, in terms of the Thor movies themselves, set up very, very high bar. I will say this does not reach that bar.
Okay.
But overall, it still was a good movie. I do have questions, though, because it is part of the Marvel Universe as a whole and a much larger storyline. I don't feel this movie advanced anything in the Marvel storyline at all, that in the overall sense. So, for example, Spider-Man No Way Home introduces the multiverse. So there are steps forward in the MCU. We saw that also take place in Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. We saw steps forward. We saw some other characters introduced in these movies. This movie, we got some new characters. I won't say who, but we did get some new characters. But overall, in terms of just advancing the story as a whole, outside of a couple cameo appearances from characters, this movie didn't advance anything. Didn't really move anything forward. And I know, like, for example, I know a lot of people I don't know if you watched the Obi-Wan series on Disney Plus.
Sure.
You're a Star Wars fan. A lot of people were griping after, the third episode, like, oh, they're doing this wrong, whatever that wrong. Like, there's still half a season left.
Right.
And then sure enough, you get through the end of the season. Oh, okay, this was great. Now they were just taking steps to set things up. I don't know if this movie took any sort of step, but I also know it's part of a larger story. This phase 4 for Marvel for me right now is just, it's almost like it's a soft reset.
Okay.
I guess you can say, because we're introducing a lot of new characters. We're figuring out where people are. We're phasing out some of the original characters that we saw in the Avengers. And again, just trying to figure out where it's going. I think eventually, probably in Phase 5, they're setting up for Secret Wars.
Sure.
Is what they're setting up. But again, I feel like this story didn't really get us any further in the overall story.
All right, a couple things. One, it's got to be difficult to continue to try and make movies that, A, work standalone.
Yeah.
And, B, do what you're saying, like, advance as part of a story, right?
Standalone, it's fun. Standalone in and of itself, it's fun. I actually feel like they could have gotten deeper. There's a depth they could have reached with the storytelling even further. I think they relied too much on the comedy bit.
Okay.
And I think there was a little bit more depth they could have reached. They probably could have gone about 10 minutes longer, all right, in all honesty.
And then two, I have a question. You say they're introducing new characters. Like, yes. I don't need a deep description of them, but like, who are some of the new characters?
Well, I don't want to spoil anything.
Oh, okay, because they've come up. So, well, but here's my thing. As the part of the reason that the Marvel Universe has done so well is it's married, like, it's brought a bunch of people in, like you who buy the comic books and have read mm-hmm. those, but also to me who like was a kid in the 80s and knew cartoons that these people existed in. Yeah. Like even if I didn't watch Thor or read Thor, I remember him being in one of the video games of Spider-Man. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like you know who these are. You
the see Marvel certain, versus Capcom games.
Yeah, like and like I've never read a Captain America comic strip mm-hmm. or a comic book. But I know who Captain America is, right? I know who Iron Man is. So, like, if you're introducing new characters, the old characters worked partly because even if I've never directly bought a comic book, they had entered my consciousness through mm-hmm. video games, movies, cartoons when I was a kid, all that stuff. Some of these new people, I worry, I'm like, I don't know who they are, and it's going to be a tougher sell to get the casual guy in to watch the movie.
I know with each phase with Marvel, there was always a big payoff. So the first phase, granted, it was a lot less movies and less characters. We got the first Avengers movie. Second phase, we got Age of Ultron as the big payoff. And then the third phase is when we got Infinity War and Endgame. This phase four, I don't think we're going to have that big tie-in payoff. I just don't think we're going to have that. And I don't know if that's going to turn some people off. But again, this is kind of like a softish reboot for the MCU.
Gotcha. All right, then I do have some information that I mentioned earlier. The Lowe's theater chain has promised to put a disclaimer in future ads, letting viewers, this is from 2005 when the lawsuit was settled.
Okay.
Disclaimer in future ads, letting viewers know the actual start time. Oh, no, letting people know that the start time listed actually means the start of the previews. Well, I mean, everyone kind of knew that.
Like, yeah.
But what we need is to know when the movie's going to start and what's the limit on time that you can show previews. It says, mm-hmm. a Chicago area woman sued Lowe's Cineplex Theaters 2 years ago after she saw The Quiet American at one of the chain's theaters. A state appellate court dismissed the suit Friday, ruling that Lowe's has solved the problem. So she sued, basically saying you're falsely advertising, saying the movie starts in. So now they just had to say, movies start with previews. So somewhere in your movie listing, and you go to the site, probably on there it says, movie will start with previews. But it doesn't say how long. Now we need regulators to step in and give you 5 minutes.
I wish they would put on, like, outside the theater.
Yep.
Outside of, like, whatever theater you're in, inside the movie theater as a whole, like a countdown clock.
Yeah, oh, that's perfect.
Just put a countdown clock.
Lawyer Mark Weinberg said Lowe's has only adopted a voluntary policy that it could drop at any time. Mm. These things go on for 20, 25 minutes with theaters just getting out of control and exploiting a captive audience. And our fast-paced society, this is 2005, we didn't even have smartphones.
Exactly.
Smartphones didn't exist and 25 minutes was still too much for this guy. 25 minutes of your precious stolen time. There's something wrong with that. Though the courts don't seem interested in stopping it from happening. We need to re-pick up this legislation. Somebody call lawyer Mark Weinberg, I'm sure he'd love the fees. And let's not sit through previews any longer. The News and Observer's Luke Dukak. He is the two-time North Carolina sports writer. Actually, I maybe more than two. At least two. He's the multi-time winner of the North Carolina Sports Writer of the Year, the longtime columnist for the News and Observer. And no, we're not going to talk Wimbledon, but we could if he wants. He is yet another person that I am pulling off of vacation to serve my whims to talk about conference realignment. Luke, what's going on, man?
It's funny. I went out to Winston-Salem to watch Kyrgios play Andy Murray last year, and then Kyrgios bailed at the last second. So I am no stranger to Kyrgios drama.
Gotcha. I actually have a question. It's not directly related to the – it's not the BB&T Open, is it, anymore? Is it the Truist Open?
I think it's just the Winston-Salem Open.
Got just the Winston-Salem Open. All right.
Yeah, I think so.
I don't have a question about that, but I have a related question about you going to the Triad to ask questions of highly paid country club sports players, but that'll come a little bit later. Let's start here. I tuned in a little bit to hear the News and Observer Spaces you guys did tonight, partly so I could get smarter and ask you to repeat the smartest things that I heard you say. This is the thing that everyone wants to know. Is the ACC coming apart at the seams? I think smart people are saying not this summer, right? Like, the next move you're going to hear is not likely to be North Carolina, Virginia to the Big Ten or whatever it might be. But I'm more concerned with what is the ACC going to do and what should they be doing right now to solidify their position as a viable conference?
Well, two things. One, you know, they've got to ensure, and this means going back to the lawyers because you know what the schools have, that the grant of rights that binds this conference together will hold up in court. As we get closer to 2036, the dynamics change. But right now in 2022, it's 14 years to run. Will this hold up in court? How could it be challenged? They need to basically do in what you call in politics, opposition research, OPPO. They need to figure out if a school like Clemson, if a school like Florida State or Miami wants to challenge the grant of rights and jump to the SEC, how do we defend that? What is our status legally? Because, you know, it looks good on paper. And it seems imposing on paper, but you and I both know that a good lawyer can turn paper into one of those little origami boats. So that's job one. Job two for Jim Phillips is he's got to get some good news to hand out to these teams that have the options. And that's the three schools I mentioned plus North Carolina. Really, those are the four, and Notre Dame. Those are the five you need to keep in the fold, to keep in the family. And you've got to give them some good news. And to me, the easiest track to do that is to stop putting the brakes on college football playoff expansion and move that. You stop that process, and for good reason at the time. But now that the dynamic has changed, you need to go back and restart that process. Boo Corrigan's the chairman of the selection committee. You've got other ACC people involved on the management side. Jack Swarbrick obviously gets his own seat at the table at Notre Dame. You've got the people in place to go push this forward. It doesn't have to be the plan that Notre Dame and the SEC were trying to hornswaggle past everybody last summer. But you need to come up with some good news, and that would be number one. And number three is you got to buy time. The only thing that can save the ACC as we get closer to 2036 is Florida State and Miami and Virginia Tech and maybe someone like NC State being CFP-worthy football teams. Honestly, 95% of the ACC's problems can be attributed to being sold a bill of goods when they added Miami to the conference.
Right.
And that's it. If you have Clemson and Miami and Florida State stays good, you're not in this fix.
You're not.
That's just the way of the world.
Yeah, you might not be making more money than the SEC, but you wouldn't be getting lapped by them multiple times like it's about to start happening in the next few years. The other thing that I've heard, Chip Patterson said it jokingly, I think, on this program, but I heard you talk about it too. Chip said, oh, it's easy. Just take Boston College cut of the pie and give it to Clemson every year and we'll be fine. Like, but one of the things that seems like it would be back on the table, you know, one of the being a conference member a lot of times has come with the everybody is treated equally and everybody gets a fair share. Do you think that there is a path to start having discussions of, hey, we're going to have to divide up the shares based on who's earning more of it right now?
Has to be discussed, and I think it'll end up happening. There's no reason in 2022 that Boston College and North Carolina should be eating out of the same trough. There just isn't, and it's not good for the conference. And quite frankly, I think there are a few schools, and I'm not going to name names, but we know who they are, who are content to sort of muddle along collecting ACC paychecks without making the same investment into athletics that other schools do. And that can't happen. It needs, now, whatever the formula is based on performance or revenue generation, or you let teams keep their bowl and NCAA tournament revenue, however you do it, there needs to be some formula that connects performance, whether that's financial or competitive, to what you get from the conference. And that goes against everything the ACC was founded on. But in this sort of crisis, there can be no half measures. If you want to keep the league together, you've got to give schools like Clemson and North Carolina a reason to stick in it.
Luke Dukakis of the News and Observer, I enjoyed talking to you and listening to things you talk about because there's some proactive stuff. It's not all – I've been kind of doing the – you know, the classic radio guy. I'm a fill-in radio guy, so I'm doing the radio thing. Like, I'm here in North Carolina yelling, don't believe swim rumors. The ACC is fine. Yeah, the ACC is fine. But like,
2004 all over.
I know. But I don't want to be that guy who's just shouting. Like, I don't want to be my own message board who's like, no, that's not happening to my league. This is North Carolina, you know. But I appreciate you again. Nobody's in denial that the ACC is in a bit of a crisis situation. It's just I'm not willing to make that next step of, and tomorrow we should all wake up expecting for North Carolina to be in the Big Ten.
Let me give you, on that note,
yeah,
can I give you my great solution / idea?
Yes.
Will agree with?
Yes, please do.
All right, so here's the thing. I've been talking to lawyers, going through the ACC's bylaws, going through the North Carolina general statute. As far as I can tell, unless I'm overlooking something painfully obvious, you can dissolve the ACC with a majority vote of schools, like any other nonprofit. There's no specific language in the ACC's bylaws or constitution. So if it becomes clear at some point that Clemson and Florida State and Miami are going to the SEC, and the Big Ten isn't buying Duke, and they're not, the legislature yokes NC State to UNC, which I realize lately I've been in the habit of giving the General Assembly unsolicited advice on everything from the handout to the ACC to gambling, but I'm gonna do it again here.
I was gonna ask you about this anyway, so go ahead. This is perfect.
Yeah,
yes.
So the legislature, if it's awake, which it could have done it on July 1st, we'll have to do it in January. It should yoke NC State to UNC in any of these discussions. So let's say the Big Ten doesn't want NC State. So now you're faced with an ACC that could potentially lose Clemson, Florida State, Miami. They figured out a way out of the grant of rights. So that's three votes to dissolve. Here's what I would do. I would take the Big Four. I would get Virginia and Virginia Tech, and that gets you to 9 votes. And I would say, we're going to do what the Sedgefield Seven did in 1953. We're going to go our own way and start over. So you take those 6 schools. You can take Georgia Tech. I like Navy. Maybe Notre Dame wants to be a part of that. You put that together. You go to ESPN, say, we'll take what's left of the ACC network and give you some programming. And you basically turn the clock back to 1953. You get rid of all these old Big East schools. You walk away from that. You start over as the Atlantic Coast Conundrum or something.
The Atlantic Coast Conundrum. Now that we're in, I don't know if you're a Marvel movie guy, but now basically you can throw out any plot and you can time travel and do things, you know what I mean? You can fix anything that went wrong in your last movie. You can go back and time travel it. I still want to go back to 1990 and put all effort, forget Notre Dame. All efforts go into peeling Kentucky away from the SEC and convincing them that they're never going to belong in a football conference, that if we get Kentucky, we become a basketball world. And down the road, when we get to now, we could pick off Kansas and have basically the Blue Blood Conference. And anybody else that we wanted in the basketball world, Connecticut if we want them, Georgetown if we want them. But, like, yeah, that would have been the decision back then, but it's a little too late for that one.
Yeah, here's my counterfactual. This is one of Gene Corrigan's great regrets as commissioner, too. He got caught asleep at the switch when the Big Ten added Penn State.
Yep.
That's why the ACC quickly moved to add Florida State. What if the ACC had added Penn State and Florida State at the same time?
At that time, yeah.
Where would the conference be now? It's an interesting counterfactual. But unfortunately, it probably means the ACC would have Rutgers in it or something. But either way, you know, there's so many points like that things that seemed like good decisions at the time. I think that turned out poorly, like extending the deal out to 2036, which is the only way the ACC could get the network, which it seemed like it so badly needed, and now is almost feels like an anchor on the ACC. I think the only one, if you look at all of those things that happened, I mean, I guess there's two. In the 90s, when Tom Mickle was sort of the consigliere of the ACC, he had a vision for a network that never really came to fruition. I mean, he did it in women's basketball. He was the first guy to get women's basketball on TV, sort of forming his own little network to do that. And then in 2010, the decision to stay with Raycom, I think, is essentially the source of all of the ACC's problems now. If the ACC had gone all in with ESPN in 2010, I don't know that the network launches any earlier, but a lot of the problems that the ACC is having now are 6 years behind them instead of 6 years ahead of them.
Luke Dukak, columnist for the News and Observer. Before I let you go, I don't know if I'll talk to you again on this. I'm filling in for Gold, but I don't know if I got another Friday before the Wyndham Championship. What questions do you have on deck for golfers when they hit Greensboro about the Live Tour?
You know, I'll be honest with you. I'm kind of Live Toured out at this point.
Okay.
I know they've tried to arrange it so there's a trickle of guys going to the tour to keep it in the headlines. You know, I guess my question would be, and his name hasn't come up, but if you're a guy who's won a major, hasn't won a lot of majors recently, has a big family, would appreciate time at home, maybe hanging out down at CCNC, you know, would somebody like Webb Simpson consider jumping to the Live Tour? I mean, I think he's the kind of guy whose profile fits. He's a big name.
Yeah.
Maybe his major contention days are behind him, although he still plays well in the Players and big events like that. And obviously, I think he's had, what, like 7 or 8 straight top 15 finishes in the Wyndham. So if he's going to jump, he shouldn't jump until after the old DGO. But that's a, I mean, I think that's an interesting name. The other one, let's keep it local. Would someone like Akshay Bhatia, who's got one Corn Ferry Tour win but is not yet secured his card for next year, has a big Callaway deal, you know, flies or has flown around on Phil Mickelson's jet. Is it make more sense for him to go after the money on the Live Tour than try to climb the ladder on the PGA Tour? I mean, I think that's, you know, all politics is local, and we haven't really had a North Carolina guy get caught up in this yet. But I think there are a couple locally who could.
That's a great answer, and two good guys that you could ask. I'm trying to decide if Akshay Bhatia is better, if we want him in the Live Tour so that you can write the Live Tour book, or if you want him to stay. If he's going to win like multiple Masters, we need him to stay here, because like you got the inside track. If Akshay goes like number one in the world and wins a multi major winner, Luke Dukak's going to be his biographer. Like, you've got that book locked down. So it's whichever would make.
I hope so, but I'm not counting on either of those alternatives.
Whichever makes the better story for Luke is what I'm rooting for Akshay, man.
Always.
Appreciate the time. Again, my apologies to all my guests. I had to pull poor David Teal out of Europe to talk to him about conference realignment. I think you're coming off the beach. I don't know where Mike Maniscalco is talking trades, but we didn't even have to hit Canes hockey because
we didn't touch Tony D'Angelo's departure.
Nah, I know. I did that with Maniscalco.
Will we ever recover?
We won't. It worked. It worked for both parties in that, and now they're parting ways. And he gets to play with John.
He gets to play with John
Tortorella again.
Yeah, no, he gets to go home. I mean, I think that's a big part of it. And, you know, both sides got out of it what they needed this year.
Yep.
Hurricanes need to add somebody in D. Those change the equation. I won't ramble on any longer. Thank you for joining our NNO Twitter space yesterday. So I'll take the free plug.
I always respect people who are trying new things. And I think you guys, when you're doing it well, it's a good listen. So keep it up. Luke Dukak, thank you. Enjoy the rest of your vacation if you're on it. And if not, get back to the sports, man. We enjoy it.
All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
It's not on the other side. It's happening right now. We're 90 minutes into the show. We got 90 minutes left. Duncan Keith retiring. That's some breaking news for you. It's halftime.
And now, your halftime entertainment.
Yep, as you just said,
Duncan Keith
is retiring.
Retiring.
Once again, big time news.
Duncan
breaking
Keith,
when Adam Cole's not here.
I feel like the ice hockey, the NHL player and the NASCAR driver.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe even some degree, especially if you get up there in Canada, like the hardcore hockey fan and the hardcore NASCAR fan, you might think that they're on a spectrum linearly, like at different ends, like way apart from each other. But I think it's more like a circle, and one's on one end and one's on the other. But if they looked around, they're like very close to each other,
okay.
Right? Like the hardcore hockey fan and the hardcore NASCAR fan. And this is true of their names as well.
Oh, yeah.
Like Duncan Keith could definitely be the driver of the 31 Cheez-It car.
Is he the teammate of Cal Maker?
Cal Maker. Yes, Cal Maker is the rookie just tearing it up in the 32 Bojangles car this summer. I think Duncan Keith, he's got one more ride in him in the number 31.
Cheez-It car.
Now let's put the Cheez-It car. Maybe put him in the Advanced Auto Parts car. That's a North Carolina product, just like Bojangles,
okay.
Right?
Or the Texas Pete.
The Texas Pete Chevy.
Yes.
There we go. Duncan Keith, NASCAR driver, retires after 72 Winston Cup wins, four checkered flags at Daytona. No, I don't know. I recognize his name, and so I was like, hockey people will care. Duncan Keith retired. Who was he playing with?
Chicago.
See, this isn't fair. Now Luke Dukakis is sending me pictures from his view at the beach.
Oh.
And guess what I see? If you see a picture from the North Carolina beach, what is going to be in that picture?
Shaboomies.
Shaboomies. Yes, there are. Yeah, that's how you know.
Yep.
That's how you know. We made those guys.
All right. Well, speaking of hockey,
yep.
Canes are actually making picks right now. They've already made 5 draft picks
Fast
today.
Fast and furious on day 2. We just sat there, did nothing. We've already made a trade and 5 picks today. We're
exactly.
flying.
Well, here's something that the NHL does. I was talking with Maniscalco off air before he had him, that they do right. Is that they don't have a card that they send up and announce the pick. It's just like, yeah, we're taking this guy. Okay, next team. Yep, we're taking this guy.
They're very efficient.
Boom, boom, boom.
We said this about NHL awards, too.
Yeah.
Everybody else loves to grab the headlines of, like, here's our Cy Young award winners. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow it'll be our Silver Slugger award winners. Tomorrow it'll be our
Gold Glove.
Coaches of the year. Tomorrow it'll be, yeah, managers of the year. Next year it'll be our MVP. And that's not just baseball. Everybody does that one award one day. NBA does it. Does it too.
Yeah.
Hockey, they give them to you all in about 2 hours.
Yep.
Right? They put a show on, they give you their awards, they're done.
Yeah, they announce early on who the finalists are.
It's the same thing.
And then just moving on.
No fanfare, and it's the same on these picks. We're taking this guy. Who you got? You got that guy? All right, let's go.
Now, would Cruz Lucius make an F1 driver?
Cruz Lucius?
Yes. He's a right winger out of. He's part of the U.S.
We took a guy named Cruz Lucius.
Yeah,
Cruz Lucius
in the 4th round
sounds like a Marvel character.
I know
Cruz Lucius, and I'm obviously calling him. You kind of want to call him Cruz Luscious because luscious, but Cruz Lucius, like the what's the word for alliteration, but when it's vowel sounds, like the repeated vowel sound of the ooh just sounds so good. Mm-hmm. Cruz Lucius, I love that.
Yes.
He's sexy. I want him on the squad.
He's a 4th rounder.
Does he have long hair? Cruz Lucius should have long flowing hair.
I need to look up.
Are you allowed to play hockey? If you have, as long as you have your pads on, do you have to have a sweater? Because Cruz Lucius sounds like he should play with just ripped abs and huge pecs.
I don't know. He might be.
And if Cruz Lucius can play that way, frankly, Rod Brindamore should be able to coach that way. I want Cruz Lucius with flowing hair and then a 6-pack of abs, oiled up, glistening, flying down the ice, and scoring goals.
Well, he does have somewhat longer hair, so okay. He's got a little bit
keep
of flow.
Keep it flowing, buddy.
A little flow out of the bucket. But
Cruz
Lucius. He probably won't be signing his entry-level contract anytime soon because he apparently did sign to play with the University of Wisconsin. But the Canes do have his draft rights
for
3 years.
University of Wisconsin, that's at Madison, right?
Yes.
That's a party school. Cruz Lucius knows what's up, dude. Cruz Lucius is like instantly vaulted into my top 5 favorite Canes right now. We lost Tony D'Angelo, so there was an opening. But Cruz Lucius is in. He wants to party hard for a year, grow his hair out, do a lot of push-ups. Rod's going to give him the workout regimen. But he's like, look, how old is he?
18.
I'm 18. I'm going to crush a lot of things in Madison for a year, okay? You can pick, listener, what those things are, but Cruz Lucius is about to crush many a thing in Madison, Wisconsin for a year. Cruz Lucius is definitely going to make it on college football. They're like, look at this fan, folks. He's drinking 14 beers at the same time while doing a handstand with one hand, and people are like, that's Cruz Lucius, our draft pick. That's what's going down with Cruz Lucius. I love this guy. And he could probably drive NASCAR too, but he doesn't quite have the NASCAR name.
That's what he's an F1 driver.
Might be an F1 driver.
Yeah.
Could be a surfer. Cruz Lucius.
I know.
I love
this
guy.
This guy.
Who
can
else
do.
Can we draft? Nobody's as good as Cruz Lucius.
A Simon Forsmark out of Sweden.
Simon Forsmark sounds like a great hockey player, so I'm fine with that.
Yeah, and then.
In fact, he's kind of nerdy. He does nothing but play hockey. I like that guy.
Yes, so, like Phil Giuseppe.
Yes,
all that guy.
Yes,
knows.
Simon. What is Simon Fordberg?
Forsmark.
All hockey, in. All the time.
Gleb Trikazov, out of Russia.
Gleb Trikazov. Yeah,
I'll
take that.
Trikazov.
Yes, I'll take that. Sounds good. Hockey name.
Oh, here we go. Second pick of the day. Alexander Paravalov.
Alexander Paravalov.
Paravalov.
Either one of those works.
Yeah.
Yep. It sounds like a solid second-line defenseman.
He's a left winger, but that's fine.
Sounds like a second-line left winger.
And then Vladimir Grudinin. He's a defenseman out of Russia as well. Check it, three Russians.
Cruz Lucius is going to, like, score 60 goals in a year, but then on, like, Friday games, we're going to be like, where's Cruz Lucius? He'll be like, dude, he went to Cancun. He said he didn't want to play this weekend. And we're like, God, I guess we got to put up with him. Cruz, he said he'd be back for the playoffs. He said we've already clinched the playoff spot, and he's gone. He needs to party a little bit.
I need to get a custom-made Cruz Lucius Wisconsin Badgers jersey.
I want one. I want the Cruz Lucius jersey.
Wear that wherever I go. All right, a couple things that you threw in here real fast. The George Clooney 1999 Batman suit is up for auction. I actually did see this, so the fact you threw it in there makes me happy. But it's the bat suit that we all know that has the
There's one feature that everybody knows about this bat suit. It's like, oh, is it the one with the large utility belt? Is it the one with the tapered cape? Like that? Like
no.
Nobody. Oh, there's only one way to describe this suit.
Mm-hmm.
It's the one with the nipples.
Yep.
They put nipples on the exterior of the suit.
Yep.
That George Clooney was wearing. I don't know if it was an attempt to bulk him up. The only thing that makes me mad, George Clooney just did one Batman, right?
Yeah.
Still not the worst Batman.
Oh, that was the Val Kilmer one.
No! That's the best one.
No,
Affleck,
it's not.
Affleck is the worst Batman actor. Affleck's the worst. Mm. Affleck, the worst. Val Kilmer, Batman Forever, still the greatest Batman movie made.
Batman and Robin was awful.
The worst. That was the worst.
That was awful.
They should have found a way to work Silverstone in as Batgirl somewhere else. Have you ever read about how little time, Arnold Schwarzenegger is actually, in that movie?
Very little.
And because they only had him contracted for, 16 hours of work, and they needed, 11 of them to get in and out of his suit. And so all his film, they're like, it's him just alone in a, they're not there, and he's like, I'm going to get you, Batman. And then later they've got a shot of Batman and be like, no, you're not. But they're clearly never, it's like when you used to see Michael Jordan ads back in the day, and it was clear that Haynes or somebody got 30 minutes of Michael Jordan's time to just, film him. And if they needed him driving away, it was just black dude with a bald head. And we're not wasting time doing Michael Jordan actually in the car driving away. We're getting Michael Jordan talking, and then we'll have somebody else. So it was clear whoever else is in the movie. Or those Gillette commercials where it's Federer, Tiger Woods, and somebody else, and they look like they're interacting with each other, but clearly they're not. They're all filmed at different times because there's no way you're getting those three dudes together at the same time. They're too busy. They got their own too much money to have them together. So, yes, that is what happened with Batman and Robin, the worst Batman movie, which followed the best Batman movie, which is Batman Forever.
Hmm. The Dark Knight would say otherwise. That bidding starts for that at $40,000, by the way.
It's got to be more. It's one of those things where
the bidding starts at $40,000.
All right, but what I'm saying is that bat suit would vault ahead of most of the other ones because it's oh, yeah, it's just a bat suit. It's cool if you like that movie. But the one with the nipples is the one that everybody talks about because it was so bad. So it's like buying the mistake baseball card or something. You're getting the bad one.
Also, you threw in here, I know I mentioned it last week, but the trailer earlier this week was interrupted by Baker Mayfield being traded from Cleveland to the Panthers, physical pending. Clerks 3, trailer dropped this week.
I only saw the trailer yesterday. It was out a couple days ago?
Yeah, it came out a couple days ago. It came out on Wednesday.
Here's the thing about the Clerks movies. Kevin Smith, I think, is smart enough to realize Clerks and the first three movies together as a series are over and done, and you're never going to make that, right?
No.
That's why Clerks 2 and Clerks 3 have been, and I hate to use the term now because it's it's now Facebook's parent company, but they intentionally did it meta, where it's they're not making an original movie, really, right? They are making fan movie stuff. It's almost like the debates you hear with these Star Wars and these Marvel people where they're like, are you trying to make a cool new story? Are you trying to make the fans happy, right?
Yeah.
And it's like that.
Are you pandering?
Clerks took that out. We're just making fans happy, right?
Yeah.
We're just bringing back the characters you want to see. And we're just doing the things you want. And we know we're not making another great movie. We're not touching Clerks. So I'm not saying I'm going to see Clerks 3 with some expectation or hope that it might be better than Clerks. Or it might be a great movie. But it's like I get to laugh at the people that I laughed to back in the day. They get to make wink and nod at all the jokes that I expected to hear. And it won't be as good, but it'll be warm and comforting. And it'll be a nice hug for me. I'm in on Clerks 3 at least seeing it. You want to go see it together?
Yeah.
When does it come out?
Well, it's starting releasing. I think it's starting in September, but at least initially they're kind of doing a tour like they did with Jay and Silent Bob, the reboot.
Gotcha.
So they're going to kind of tour with cities.
Including, they're coming through Raleigh, North Carolina, I know, aren't they?
I don't know if they are.
Aren't they all going to be at GalaxyCon?
They are going to be at GalaxyCon.
So I assumed that that was kind of like part of the reason that multiple people from that movie are going to be at GalaxyCon is because it was
like Kevin Smith
movie promotion.
Yeah, all those guys are going to be there. Yeah. But one final thing here real fast before we take a break. Thor: Love and Thunder.
We got your review.
$29 million in the preview box office last night.
Is that good?
That's very good.
I don't have context for that. Congratulations to Thor: Love and Thunder.
I give it a 7 out of 10.
All right, 7 out of 10. It's a pretty good score. If every movie I saw got a 7 out of 10, I'd be happy.
Okay.
There's not all going to be nines. 7 is a good movie experience.
Yeah,
worth your money. Also, if Thor's a god, how is he also walking around with like regular dudes? Did they explain that?
What do you mean?
Like he's a god.
Okay.
So like, I don't know. How's he like standing there next to Captain America? Like one dude's a man, one dude's a god. Come on.
Okay, and?
They feel like they would play in different leagues.
I guess.
I'm just saying. That's always a problem I've had. It is time to use.
Don't get me started.
I'm just trying to use up some more of Adam Gold's money. I lost him 300 units on Tuesday. Wednesday, I made 77 of them back. Thursday, I placed some bets that will be determined this weekend or later in the future, week one of the NFL season, when Sam Darnold may or may not be the starter. And then Aaron Judge didn't play. I bet on him to hit a home run, and he didn't even play. I don't have to count that, right?
No, you don't.
Heck yeah.
No action.
And because I'm mad, I'm starting my first bet right there. It's time for Place Your Bets.
Place your bets. Here we are.
I bet you slice into the woods $100.
Gambling is illegal at Bushwood, sir, and I never slide.
Death! Okay, you can own me. I owe you one.
All right, because he didn't play last night when I had money riding on him to hit a home run, I'm betting on Aaron Judge to not hit a home run tonight. That's right. I'm betting against him hitting a home run. It's minus 245, so I'm not going to make a lot of money. But I'm taking it. Don't mess with me, Judge. I'm betting against you hitting a home run. I'm playing the come bet. I'm calling you short. You're not winning.
Okay.
Minus 245.
All right. Well, you know what? In that case, I'm taking Aaron Judge to hit a home run tonight.
Okay.
At plus 180.
All right. Fair enough. Next up, why don't we just bet each other and then not have to pay the house? I wish there were a way to do that. Wish there a way to do that on an app? Wish that were legal. All right, next up. This is actually going to come up in our next segment on the Wall of Sound. But there is something called the American Championship or Celebrity. I forget the exact name. Some celebrity golf tournament.
Okay.
There's 87 celebrity golfers playing, including Steph Curry, who's one of the people who could potentially win because he's really good at golf. You know who's not going to win? Charles Barkley, because he's terrible.
Yeah.
But he is plus 260 to finish in the top 70. That means there's only 87 people. We're betting for 69. I guess he can be top 70. So he can be 70th. He doesn't have to be under 70. I'm taking Barkley at plus 260 to make that mark. That's my second bet. What you got?
All right. Summer League, Hornets, Pacers. I'll take the Hornets plus 155.
Got to go with the home team. Got to go. Plus 155? Mm-hmm. The disrespect. And finally, my man Nick Kyrgios didn't have to play a Wimbledon semifinal. I think he's rested up, and I like the value bet. Kyrgios plus 340 to take out Djokovic in the Wimbledon final. Djokovic 0 for Grand Slams this year. I think he keeps it that way.
All right, I'm going to UFC this weekend. Rafael Fiziev wins by decision over Rafael Dos Anjos in a lightweight fight, plus 150.
I think you just made that up.
I
think you're just making up names and making up numbers, and I don't believe you.
Okay.
But I won't be here to sort it out, so I don't care.
This is the Adam Gold Show.